Lately when we go to David Tarachuk, I kind of feel like John Oliver. Years ago, yes, folks, when Donald Trump was first elected president, John Oliver, who is the host of Last Week Tonight, came on and gave bad news, what he called bad news. And he said, it can't get any worse. And the next week it was there, and the next week it was worse. And after 9 weeks in a row, he just said, you know what, I can't do this anymore, because it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. Well, we're going to bring in David now, because it's not a question of worse and worse and worse. It's the question of curiouser, curiouser, and curiouser. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. It's good to be back with you. And yes, indeed, it feels like we're on the same whirligig, and it's just getting faster and faster. And yeah, we're gonna fly away in different pieces. And who knows what disaster will loom next week? Of course.
And what's really strange about this is that it's happening on both sides the Atlantic Ocean. It's like,
well, I happen to be a citizen of two countries, and in both countries the constitutional confrontations building up are horrifically I'm not going to say balanced, because I'm not sure how to balance them out, but yeah, equally shocking and full of storm and drang, and a lot of huffing and puffing, as well as some really, at the core, very serious stuff. So where do you want to go first?
Well, I guess we can try to look at the coverage that's going on, which is to say the events in England and the events in the United States with the constitutional crises that are developing in both places. I think that the media is trying to get its act together on this. But, you know, I'm old enough to remember watching Watergate hearings and everything like that. And, yeah, it was a little simpler. And, yes, media was much more effective back then, because there were many more bureaus and a lot more money was spent in the news departments. But, you know, I'm a little disappointed once again in the coverage of these events, because it's more hype than substance. And I think one thing that happened back in the Watergate era, I can tell you, there was more substance than hype that came out.
Yeah, and of course that was simply because there wasn't the overheated competition between multifarious outlets. You had three networks, and when it got to the point when there was live coverage, gavel of the Watergate committee, with Senator Ervin chairing it, that was almost mandatory viewing for just about everyone in the country, because of course we only had three major networks in play. Now, with everybody taking their choice out of a whole universe of different avenues of coverage, many of them highly partisan, of course, you get the messiness that we've got now. And of course the hype, because at the core of all this multiplicity is of course competition between all the outlets. And that only seems to take, well, it doesn't take only one form, but the dominant form is people yelling for our attention. I guess the other thing is that it's really difficult for serious journalists in this, especially in the electronic media, to operate seriously right now, because certainly we are definitely in impeachment mode now. The Democrats in the House are now putting that label on all of the inquiries that are going on simultaneously, in a kind of umbrella way. The fact remains, and everyone does acknowledge this when they go through it seriously, is that it's a train that's going, sure, but it's not going to go anywhere. It hasn't got a destination. It hasn't got the destination desired by starting it up. Everyone accepts. So everyone who's got any got an ounce of political awareness is that impeachment will not pass because impeachment articles might be prepared by the House, but an impeachment process requires the form of a trial at the end in the other House, the Senate. And there is no way that's going to happen. This Republican-controlled Senate will not impeach this Republican president. So it's a lot of huffing and puffing going nowhere. But on the other hand, and everyone who's serious about politics has to say this too, that it is a political process, and it is one tool which the Democrats who control the House have at their disposal, and it makes total political sense in some way to make full use of it. Now, whether it's going to rebound on them is a fine political calculation, and only time will tell.
It's looking at what's going on, and there's a recess that's also coming up. And what I think a lot of people are complaining about this recess, I think it's actually a great thing. I remember in one of my first divorces, David, the judge gave a cooling off period before you could move forward. It was mandatory. It was a 90-day cooling off period. And maybe this 2-week thing where
does it remind you at all, Marshall, of the British term proroguing?
Yeah, that's right.
Parliament is also in recess, but not willingly so. And of course now they've come back, so the storm and drang has started up again in Britain too. The truth is, in Britain there would be a pause anyway, because this is the season of political conventions. That's what we've been talking about the last couple of weeks. But here in the States too, maybe there'd be some advantage in taking a pause. And the recess are flying here as well. Even though, of course, dedicated, aggressive politicians want to stay in gladiator mode.
I think what having the 2 weeks are here, and I think now in the UK is that there'll still be politicians doing their investigating and doing everything like that, but. What blew up this week in both England and the United States, the snarkiest that came out of political representatives on both continents, and those snarky comments, that's where the media is falls by the wayside. Those snarky comments became the news and not the news.
Yeah. Sure.
It does nobody any good.
Yeah, rhetoric is all part of the hype, of course. And in Britain, you had Boris Johnson evoking in ways that brought up critics of bad taste at the weakest. And Britain is very sensitive to matters of bad taste, we know. But also what he was doing when he was getting on his very angry high horse. And talking in terms of terms not dissimilar to Trump when Trump was speaking only yesterday here in New York in a private meeting with his diplomatic team at the United Nations, when he was muttering about anyone who helped the CIA. Well, New York Times says it's a CIA whistleblower who has brought the whole question of the president trying to lean on the Ukraine for his own political gain, Trump's own political gain. Anyone who helped that whistleblower is someone who's committing treason. And darkly, he said that what we used to do when people have committed treason. This is the hyper vicious language that is extremely unwelcome. And the media nonetheless laps it up. Much of the media laps it up. Without pausing for thought and giving us some of the facts of the matter. For instance, mean, do you happen to know the last time that we actually executed anyone for treason? That seemed to be the dark hint that Trump was making. Well, it was way back in the Civil War. So, you know, the intensity of the language is far removed from the facts of the matter and the reality of the situation as we see it.
I sit here and you must look at this because, like you said, both countries you hold dear to your heart, and you have much more knowledge than somebody who didn't spend so much time covering, especially what you did, which is covering news stories both in Europe and here in the United States. Someone has got to write a comprehensive book on this moment in the history of politics in the world, because quite frankly, it almost resembles certain political movements want to go back to what politics were like in Europe and the United States before the First World War.
Well, sure, there's a regressiveness on both sides of the Atlantic, and of course, you know, Britain and the United States are not alone in this. So you take a look at Hungary, you take a look at, in many ways, the biggest democracy in the world, too, is having a severe attack of this, too. In India, I'm talking about, there is an extraordinary kind of nostalgia at work with the Hindu National Party that's in control, harking back to, of course, a non-existent glorious past is what they're talking about. Make America great again, after all, is the slogan. And Britain's Little England approach to operating in the world, coming out of an international alliance and going it alone, has all those same hallmarks. You know, we were once magnificent and strode the world as the British Empire, and that's an irrational part of this whole mix, which is very difficult to digest if you're a realistic modern global citizen. Which, of course, every single one of us is. A global citizen, I mean, various degrees of willingness about that. But the world is a global entity. There's no getting away from it. And the desire to sort of almost stop history and turn it back is a very peculiar and, as you say, very widespread syndrome right now. It feels psychological. It feels as if it's almost pathological. But it's there, and not just in our two countries. There's a lot of it about, as they say.
No, well, you know, globalization has a lot of great aspects to it. The world is a smaller place. People know each other better. Civilizations know each other better. But the problem with globalization is what the problem is in the United States, and that is globalization has led to industrial globalization as well. And that's where the two really come to fight with one another. There's a lot of good that goes on by the globalization in the business community. But also, you can also take a look at what businesses do in this country and how they corner the market and everything. And that happens worldwide. I think the way we're going to get through all this and politicians in Europe, the United States, Asia, even China are going to have to understand they have to take the globalization and put it into two distinct categories of business and human globalization, because that's where the fear comes in. And that's where, if you get 30% of the population in a country fears that some other country is taking something away from them, well, sooner or later that will lead to strife or war. It's just shown in history.
Yeah, and I'll quote perhaps an odd source for our discussions these days, but the British novelist Thomas Hardy, well over 150 years ago, was writing about this, and many of his novels were centered on it. The whole point is, with every new major social change and social social changes are often brought about by industrial changes too. They have been for the last 300 years. There are going to be winners and losers, and the society that is a successful society is going to be judged by how well it takes care of the losers, or at least adjusts things to take account of losers, as well as concentrating on winning, is a measure of what I think we can call civilization. And we're in a time of great technological change as well as industrial change, you know, trading change, and we need to take care of the people who end up losing out, because people do end up losing out, and they're often older people, they're people who are in, you know, almost psychologically not the best prepared for change in the first place. And so we do have these extraordinarily regressive, sort of pathologically nostalgic movements, which have at their fringes some very violent tendencies, and you know, we have to live with it, and we have to take account of it, and how we take account of it, and not glory it, which is some leaders have fallen into a chasm of doing, is the great political challenge of our day, I think.
You know, when you come back to this country and you take a look at what's going on with the impeachment, I posted this on my Facebook page yesterday, and it basically said, I'm not going to allow anybody to post anything here on the impeachment process, and I'm not going to post anything, and I want everybody to take a break and wait until whatever happens, happens. Because, and this is one thing the media is at fault for here in covering this, there is going to be an impeachment. There is. I mean, there are enough Democrats
in
the
House. The train is rolling. Yeah,
it's rolling out
in a certain direction.
And it's not going back.
There's no station that it's going to arrive at. That's the problem that I was alluding to earlier. But I'm sorry, I was interrupting.
That's exactly right. The train has left the station, and it's not
like
going back.
It's like that garbage barge.
And what the media has to do is treat it like not if is an article. Wait till
they don't have that capacity. I'm sorry to interrupt. That's the problem.
Just follow the process, knowing that it's going to come to where it's going to go. We already know the destination, and we might as well save all the big scoop stories for when they actually happen, and not try to predict that they're going to happen, because that only amps up the negative atmosphere even more.
And David's point is well taken. At this moment, there isn't a particular destination. So that's why I alluded to, I don't know if anyone remembers that, it could be ageist, but the that barge, this was decades ago, and it was covered with garbage, and no one would take it, and it was just going up and down the East Coast.
Yeah, but
of the
this,
United States.
I think there is a destination here. The Democrats have no way of backing out of this now. They just do not have a way of backing out of this, and they
will
go.
Well, the most immediate destination is that impeachment articles could well be prepared.
Well, yes. they'll have to do. They'll almost
that's
have to do that.
That's what's going to happen. The articles will be prepared, and they're going to go into this process. I'm telling you right now, it's the destination is there. Now, how many people get on and off the train is another thing, but the destination's there.
If your destination is preparing articles of impeachment, then that's fine. But what the people covering this have to be aware of is that that is not the same thing as being impeached.
Or being found guilty in impeachment.
Right. Yeah, but
And you know, there, I mean, historical precedents are not without their relevance. I mean, I'm now totally forgetting the sage who's supposed to have said this, but you know, predicting is a very difficult thing, especially about the future.
Yeah, right.
Well,
or there's that great this
because it's about the future, but you know, looking to the past for precedent is. It's not a totally pointless exercise, even in these overheated times. And, you know, I guess one possibility people are maybe, if only subconsciously, clinging to is the most recent not the most recent. Clinton was the most recent case, wasn't it? But the most resonant case, I guess, is still Nixon, President Nixon. And what happened there was that a group of sage and powerful Republicans, mainly senators, went to visit the president and said, look, you're going to get impeached. The best thing to do for you is gracefully as you can, resign. And that, of course, is what he did. That's how he avoided impeachment. I mean, it's a very thin straw to clutch to, but I mean, I can see some people thinking, well, that might work in this case. But yeah, that requires an extraordinary walk fast by an awful lot of very high-ranking Republicans in the current situation, including Mitch McConnell, most of all.
Well, the only
that's not likely to happen at all.
But what the problem is that 90% of the American public, and now I swear 50% of the American broadcast media, does not know what impeachment is. Once a president's been impeached, he's been impeached. Now, whether he's guilty or not or convicted by the Senate, when you are impeached, all that means is a legislative, the House has leveled charges against you. You never get rid of that impeachment. Whether or not the Senate convicts you is another thing. But I used to fight with my friends all the time about, well, Bill Clinton wasn't impeached because they didn't get enough votes. No, you're impeached, you're impeached. Now, whether you're convicted of that impeachment is something else.
Sorry, so that just really
makes sense. But remember, Clinton left office on something of a high. He'd been impeached, sure, but his poll ratings in the country were extraordinary.
Absolutely.
The man was not fatally damaged by being impeached, in fact, far from it.
This is sort of, I mean, there are people who go to prison for being, you know, for behaving badly, and then they come out and they're rehabilitated and they go on to do great things, and it becomes part of their resume. One of the ongoing issues is the absolute panini of politics in all of this. You know, nothing is separated from the huffing and puffing and politics, and it is really impossible to get a linear anything out of anything at this juncture. And I think that is tremendously frustrating. This was just a little bit of side research that I did the day that, I guess it was Tuesday or Wednesday, when every single It was Wednesday. When the people were just so, what's going to happen next? And it was before the whistleblower complaint had been released, after the transcript had been released. And if you looked at various news sources, that was the only thing going on. I happened to check the front page of the Des Moines Register at that time. Nothing. I checked the Dallas Morning News. I know it's just Dallas.com now. Nothing. And I thought, wow, you know, this, it really depends on your, whether you are part of this particular world.
Oh, sure. If you're in the hothouse, you'll join the shouting gang. Yeah, of course you will.
But in both.
And if you're not, you won't.
But both here and in UK, it appears that not everyone is in the hothouse. And I just wonder how, yeah, there's an old showbiz saying, how will it play in Peoria? You know, really and truly, as if I you know, with any journalistic curiosity, I would highly recommend that someone go out and, you know, poke around.
Sure. I mean, national polls are suggesting right now, and then these are conducted after the whistleblower reported, or after his whistleblowing was reported, rather, but before the publication of the actual complaint, the whistleblowing complaint. But it's a very finely balanced national poll that says something like 49% of the American public right across the country, including places like Peoria, are in favor of impeachment, and 46, I think, are against it. So I guess as everyone does try to keep reminding us, this is not a judicial process, but a political process. So, you know, it's a battle. What's going on is, of course, a battle for public opinion and, in the end, for voters' response. And what we have now is a situation which is not finely balanced, but certainly not very clear. It's not clear at all. And I think the more people behave as if it, you know, we're dealing with certainties here, which is what a lot of the journalistic hype is all about. Cries of gotcha almost resounding off the roof of many newsrooms. And that's certainly misplaced. There's nothing gotcha about this. There's nothing definite at all. As they keep saying on the British side of the Atlantic right now, we are, the phrase that's constantly coming up, we are in uncharted waters.
Although it seemed that a couple of days ago, after all of the just screaming of this last week over there, suddenly it just seems to have, I don't know, the air has gone out. Maybe it's just because it's Friday, but it's
well. You can't keep screaming forever.
No, you can't.
That's a physiological fact.
Because at some point,
everyone needs to take a break. Even the hot and bothered politicians.
And not only that, what gets lost, and this is so frustrating, is that there's actual news, as Marshall says. We've got 1 minute left. There are actual things going on in different places that would be worthy of people's attention if the attention was directed thus.
Sure, absolutely. The news machine has got to have a very wide funnel. The trouble is that it's compressed so much at the other end, and all we get coming out, spurting at us, is a kind of hose pipe effect, concentrated on one of the big argument of the moment.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.